Blog Talk Radio.
With a little luck and, you know, maybe a few prayers and magic spells and other things, you are finally listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you one and all for joining me on this Friday before a three-day weekend. The weekend is upon us. Hope everybody has some fabulous Labor Day plans all lined up and ready to go. I have not been here for the last 2 weeks. We've had some technical difficulties, as they say, some technical glitches going on because, you know, I think we all know that our world is pretty much run by computers now, and when those computers are up and running, it's a marvelous, phenomenal thing, but man, when they are not running, when they are down, it is a major pain in the kishka, in the tukis, because this is a family show, so we're going to keep it clean. But, anyway, like I said, thanks everybody for hanging out with me today. Of course, we've got lots to get into. As usual, there is never a dull moment. Even going into a holiday weekend, we've got lots of stuff to talk about. So I will get right to it. And, you know, I think that, you know, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and the Iran deal and you know, I could talk about all those things, and we're going to do that, but, God, it's just, you know, and the police shootings, and not the police shootings in the way that people like Black Lives Matter use the phrase police shootings. I'm talking about literally police shootings, and, you know, we can get into all that. We'll get into all of that later on, but, you know, I'm almost at a point, I'm almost at a saturation point here because, you know, we've talked about and analyzed, you know, the Trump phenomenon, and we can talk about that again. And because, you know, you can get on the chat room. Of course, the chat room is open. What a segue. And you can also call in here. The number is 347-857-2620. 347-857-2620. So, you know, we can talk about all those things, but I'm just, you know, I mean, the whole Hillary Clinton email thing, there's just this slow, steady trickle of information. And after a while, you just, you know, I'm bored in a roundabout, not very articulate kind of way. What I'm trying to say is I'm bored with Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump is entertaining as ever. And there's lots to talk about there, but I'm getting to the point where there has to be how much more can you say about it, basically. But, you know, we can. Like I said, we can talk about it because that's why we're here. But, you know, I really want to kind of start out here with a couple of cultural things here because, you know, a lot of times I feel like here on Conservative Cauldron Radio that I don't, you know, we do a lot of meat and potatoes politics here, and I do want to cover cultural things and things that affect our daily lives, not that politics doesn't, but maybe on a more on a smaller scale, on a local, for lack of a better word, more local scale. And you know, one of the things here, I think the biggest story, and you know, I've been following this story of the county clerk in Kentucky, and I think a lot of people have kind of. It's kind of grown and grown and grown, and I think it kind of it kind of reached a zenith, a high point yesterday when Kim Davis, the Rowan County, Kentucky county clerk, and she has been in the news pretty much all week long here about her her refusal to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples based on her religious convictions. And like I said, this finally came to a head yesterday when she was put in jail for violating a Supreme Court ruling, violating the law on the issuing of same-sex marriage licenses to gay couples. And I have a report here. This is from Fox 59, Eyeball News, in Rowan County, Kentucky. This morning, the first gay couple, William Smith Jr. and James Yates, were the first couple to receive their marriage license in Rowan County, Kentucky. Of course, there was a throng of waiting for them, and they came out of the courthouse holding hands a little bit after 8 a.m., and opponents booed and supporters cheered, and they chanted, "Love wins." You know, we can talk about that, too. But Yates, the quote from James Yates here is that, quote, "We're just really happy to finally get married and have it recognized here." This is a quote from James Yates, one half of the first gay couple to be granted a marriage license in Rowan County, Kentucky this morning. He proposed to William Smith Jr. this summer after a 9-year relationship. Okay, there's the nuts and bolts of that. Here's the thing. before I get to that, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but this is the first, this is the first marriage, same-sex marriage license that has been issued in Rowan County, Kentucky. The county clerk, Kim Davis, she has refused the issuances of marriage licenses to same-sex couples on multiple occasions now, and she is citing her Christian beliefs and her Christian convictions, her religious beliefs. A federal judge ordered her to jail on Thursday, ruling that she was in contempt of court for not issuing these licenses. This was U.S. District Judge David Bunning said that Kim Davis would remain behind bars until she complies. And Kim Davis and her supporters say that she intends to remain in jail at the very least until there's a compromise. And let's see here. Her attorney, what my report here is a little here. What's this guy's name? Matt Staver, who is Davis's attorney, told CNN his quote: "The license she would issue that Kim Davis would issue the licenses if her name and her title were not on them, and again because of her Christian values and her beliefs." And her husband Joe also says that she will remain in jail for as long as it takes, and her deputy, she has 5 deputy county clerks working under her. 4 of them have agreed to issue these licenses to gay couples. One of the only other county clerk that has refused to do so is her son, who is also a Rowan County clerk. He has refused to issue same-sex licenses. And this is one of those stories, I think, that a lot of people maybe can look at this and see it only through a lens of black and white, that either it is or it isn't, that it's, you know, there's two very clear viewpoints to this. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know that it is. The ACLU, their attorneys contend that Kim Davis has no legal basis to avoid performing her duties as a government clerk. Well, no, she does not have any legal basis. So you can't here. And here's what one of the things I'm talking about. You can look at this as strictly on a legal basis, but that's not the only thing that we're talking about here. We're not just talking about legality. And a federal prosecutor said that it was time for her to comply. her and her county to comply. The quote here, this is from U.S. Attorney Carrie B. Harvey, quote, government officials are free to disagree with the law but not disobey it. The county clerk has presented her position through the federal court system all of the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. It is time for the clerk and the county to follow the law. The judge, Judge Bunning here, said he too was religious, but he explained that when he took his oath to become a judge, that oath trumped his personal beliefs. And he goes on to say, quote, her good faith belief is simply not a viable defense. Well, there are many arguments here that would argue that it most certainly is a viable defense. And like I said, you can argue a world of legalities here. Maybe there's a lot of people that would say, well, if this goes against her beliefs, why didn't she just resign? Well, because it's not about that. That's easy. You can say, yeah, I resign, I quit, but it's not. That's addressing a symptom, but it's not addressing the problem. And the problem here is, and I think one of the questions here is very clear, and that is that because of this Supreme Court decision, that there's been a setup here, the setup of a question of whose rights are more important, the rights of same-sex couples to get married? No one is telling people that they can't get married. Go get married. But what they're saying, in a sense, is one group of people's rights is more important than another. And what that says is the rights of gay couples to marry, and again, nobody's telling them that they can't get married, but it's saying to people who have deeply held Christian beliefs and Christian values, that your rights and your beliefs don't matter. Someone else's is more important than yours. And that is a very slippery slope. It sets a very, very dangerous precedent, because now what we have, in a sense here, is someone who's basically been jailed for their religious convictions. In America, in 2015, someone, an American citizen, has been jailed for their religious convictions. And, you know, there's also a lot of people who are saying that they're combing through Kim Davis's life history and her life experiences and, you know, everything about her to try to dig up something on her that will just, you know, completely bring her down and completely refute her whole argument. And one of those things is that she's been divorced 3 times and that she is the mother of two children who were born out of wedlock. Okay, you know, I'm certainly no, as a practicing pagan, as a practicing Wiccan, I'm certainly no expert on Christian doctrine. But my husband is. And not just from listening to him, but I can look it up and see it all over the place. What I get from Christian doctrine is that no one is perfect. No one is mistake free. And I think, personally, I kind of think that Kim Davis is maybe a walking example of how Christianity is, for lack of a better way to put it, how it's supposed to work. Here's a person who maybe, you know, by some people's judgment, and, you know, I'm going to say, who are we all to judge, you know, because ultimately there's another judge, and you can make up your own mind as to who that judge is. But here's a person who maybe has not led, you can put so many words in here. You know, she's been divorced 3 times. She had her children out of wedlock. And, you know, by all accounts here, from everything that I've read, Kim Davis is the first one to say, yeah, you know what? I've made some mistakes in my life. I've lived my life in a way that maybe was not pleasing to the God that I worship now. I was leading a life that maybe was contradictory to what my beliefs are now. But I have since tried to turn my life around, and I have become a Christian. And I have chosen to follow that path, and I've chosen to give my life over to God and try to, I can't fix those mistakes, and I'm not saying that her children are mistakes, certainly not, but that she is trying to live her life in a different way. And like I said, I think she's going to be the first one to stand up and say that, no, maybe I haven't lived an exemplary life, but I've given my life over to God now, and I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to, maybe I can't fix it. I can't go back to the past and fix it, but I can start over and I can start anew. And by becoming a Christian, I know that I've been forgiven by God for any of my sins. And you know, like I said, I think that she is kind of a walking example of how it's supposed to work. And you know, of course, the left and people who are same-sex supporters, and I say that kind of loosely because I really kind of sit on the fence about this. I don't really care who gets married, but what I do care about is, especially in the Supreme Court decision, and I've talked about this on air, is that it's a 10th Amendment issue to me. It's a states' rights issue to me. But not to open up that can of worms again, you know, the left is funny about religion, and especially Christianity. Well, you can take Christianity and Islam side by side and look at how the left deals with them. And I don't think that the left doesn't understand Christianity, I don't think. I don't think that they don't understand the concept. They don't understand when they hear Christian doctrine, they take it as, they don't understand it, and so therefore they mock it. Excuse me. But with Islam is a completely unwritten rule, and they'll even almost as far as come out and said it, and probably several liberal talking heads, you know, whether online or on TV or on radio or you know, pick a spot. They have, you know, as much as come out and said, well, yes, we need to understand Islam, and we need to understand why these people are angry with us. We need to understand why they don't like our culture. So, you know, I think we all know by now that there's a very different way that the left handles and liberals handle religion when it comes to Christianity as opposed to any other religion, say, Islam. But, you know, there's another thing, too, and this was something that I was reading online yesterday, and I'd be stealing it, quite frankly, if I didn't give Matt Walsh kudos for this great piece that he wrote at The Blaze yesterday. And one of the things he said in that piece is that, you know, people who are people on the left, people who are supporting, who are opponents of Kim Davis and her right to refuse to do this based on her religious convictions, they're going on and on and on. They're blathering on and on about the rule of law. The rule of law, since when have liberals ever given a rat's rear end about the rule of law? They have a president who for the last 7 years has done nothing but try to skirt the rule of law. He's gone around Congress. He's gone around the Supreme Court. He's gone around every rule of law when he wants his way that you can think of. And when it comes to those instances, that's perfectly fine. There's always an explanation for it. But in this case, no, no, no. It's the rule of law. Bam, bam, bam. So, you know what? Maybe they could explain the difference, you know, when it comes to Barack Obama skirting the rule of law and when someone stands up and says, you know, here are my religious convictions and I cannot do what you're asking me to do based on those religious convictions. So, you know, that's like I said, there's so many angles to this story, and I'm going to be writing about it, not just only at the Conservative Cauldron blog, but other places as well, hopefully. But you know, so there's that. There's all of these people who will blather on about the rule of law, yet when it comes to their guy, they could care less about the rule of law. And you know, I think too that one of the reasons people may ask me why I am defending this woman so vehemently, and here's why. It's not about whether or not I agree with her religion, with her choice of religions. It's not about whether or not I agree with same-sex marriage or not. It's not about that. What it's about, the freedom to worship the way that you choose. It's the very bedrock. It's the very founding principle that this country was founded upon. And as someone who is a practicing Wiccan, someone who is a witch, I'm the member of a minority faith. I'm the member of a minority religion. And I've been lucky. I'm blessed. I have not had a lot of discrimination hurled at me. I have not had a lot of bigotry that I've had to deal with based on that. I've been very blessed. I have a very supportive family. I have a very supportive Christian husband. I have a very supportive friends and coworkers. And so I read about the things that other pagans go through. And it's the bottom line for me is that if I don't defend Kim Davis and her right to worship in the way that she chooses, who's going to defend that for me? Adage about, when they came for the Jews, I didn't speak up. And when they came for the socialists, I didn't speak up. But when they came for me, there was no one left to speak up for me. Exactly. That's exactly where I come from on this. If I don't speak up for other people's right to worship as members of whatever religion, whatever tradition they choose to follow, be it Christianity or anything else, who's going to speak up for me if and when, and God forbid, that it ever happens, who's going to be there to speak up for me? It has to be that way. And, if people have a problem with me as a pagan defending this woman, I'm more than happy to talk about it. But for me, it's personal for me, and it's personal for that very reason, very reason alone. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. I've got another story here. It's a local story here. I don't know if a lot of people have heard about it, about a transgendered teen at a high school here in the St. Louis area. And he thinks that he should be able to use the girls' locker room. And, again, it's a lot of cultural stories, I think, that are kind of swirling around this week that just kind of are related. They kind of tie into each other. So I am glad to be back on air with all of you. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to get into a whole lot more. I got a great thing here from the Daily Beast, of all places, about Hillary Clinton's emails. I know we're bored, but I guess we got to talk about it. Anyway, I'm going to take a break. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back. We'll be right back. You're listening to, finally, the Conservative Cauldron, Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, one and all, for hanging out with me on this glorious Friday morning before a three-day weekend. Woohoo! We have finally made it, people. The weekend is upon us. Hope everyone has some fantastic plans lined up for this three-day weekend. Hope everyone is safe about those plans, and hope there's a lot of fun stuff going on this weekend. We got a lot of fun stuff going on here. Of course, we're talking about Rowan County, Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis, and her what a lot of people are calling courageous. It's a gutsy move. It's a courageous move. She was ordered to jail yesterday by a federal judge for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples in Rowan County, Kentucky. And it's really not clear how long she's going to be in jail. But she is, you know, regardless of your thoughts on whether or not you agree or disagree with her, or whether or not you agree or disagree on gay marriage, that's not the issue. The issue here is that we have somebody who is standing up, she's standing firm for what she believes. Whether you disagree or agree with it or not, she's standing for what she believes. She's standing up for her rights. She's standing up for her beliefs. And how refreshing is that? And, you know, the fact that it is refreshing is really kind of sad, because we see so much caving these days, whether or not it's politicians or anywhere else. You see so many people cave on their convictions and their beliefs, and I think it's gutsy, I think it's courageous, and I think that she should be applauded, if for nothing else, for standing her ground and for standing on those beliefs and standing on her convictions, because nobody does it anymore. And you know, a lot of people, you know, maybe we throw the word hero around too much, but you know, I think that at some point maybe people are gonna call this heroic. Maybe it's not. I mean, you know, you can compare it to a lot of things, and maybe it's not heroic, but it is gutsy and it is courageous. And we definitely have not heard the end of that story. We will be following it, and we'll see what happens with it. But like I said, there's another story here in the St. Louis area. I think it probably has gone national by now. And this is a story that comes out of Hillsboro, Missouri. Hillsboro is a smaller town south of St. Louis. And I got to confess, I don't know a lot about Hillsboro. It's a small town, and so I'm assuming that there are a lot of people that live in Hillsboro who have a lot of small town values and a lot of small town beliefs and convictions. Again, here today, kind of a theme here today, we're talking about beliefs and convictions. Well, earlier this week, this is a report from KMOX, which is the local CBS radio affiliate here in St. Louis. Over 150 high school students voiced their displeasure about a transgender teen using the girls' locker room by walking out of class. Students at Hillsboro High School staged a two-hour walkout. This was this past Monday. Over 17-year-old Lila Perry, a student who has identified as a female since she was 13, using the girls' locker room during gym class. The school had offered Perry a gender-neutral bathroom, which she turned down. St. Louis attorney Tim Showalter says, quote, "All students have a right under Title IX to access the bathroom of their choice." Family members of high school students were also holding a protest. This is a quote here from a protester by the name of Jeff Childs. He says, quote, "Boys need to have their own locker room. Girls need to have their own locker room. And if somebody has mixed feelings where they are, they need to have their own also." So he is obviously in favor of a gender-neutral locker room / restroom. But he was also holding a sign that said, "Girls' rights matter." Why, yes, they do. Tammy Sorden, whose son goes to Hillsboro High School, believes it's not right to give Lila special treatment, quote, "while the girls just have to suck it up. The girls have rights, and they shouldn't have to share a bathroom with a boy." This is a quote she gave to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The lawyer in question here, Tim Showalter, He's worked with many corporations in gender equality and transgender issues. He was interviewed on Camo X Radio Wednesday morning, and he was asked where he thought the situation would end up. And listen to this quote, because this quote is very telling about what liberals do when they want something but the majority of the American public does not. This is a quote, again, from attorney Tim Showalter, who is involved in this case. And his quote is this, quote, "It's going to end up in court, and that's where most of these issues are decided. You have the administrative agencies, OSHA, EEOC, and the Department of Education clashing with the courts. Most of the time, the court, when the issue gets there, will not enforce those guidelines." And at the end of the report here, it goes on to say that Lila Perry has dropped out of gym class for safety concerns. Now, that's a problem, and we'll get to that in a minute. But she still plans on using the girls' bathroom. Well, you know, this is another thing, I think, and again, the thing that jumped out to me the most about this story was the quote from that attorney. Well, yes, of course it's going to end up in court. And the reason it's going to end up in court is because when issues like this, whether it's gay marriage or whether it's transgender teenagers, regardless of what the issue is, if the left wants it bad enough, they're willing to shove it down the throats of the American people, and they're going to do what they need to do to get it there. And if they need – usually that he's right. He's absolutely right. That's how they get – that is how the left gets from point A to point B, is that they shove these issues down the throats of the American people through court cases and through dragging it through the courts, through the court system. And, you know, there can be a lot of things said about this. You know, a lot of people are going to look at this as – a lot of people look at it as a moral issue. A lot of people look at it as a psychological issue, that maybe their first answer to this question would be, well, maybe this person, you know, you can call him a boy or a girl or, you know, however you want, maybe they need to seek out some sort of psychological help for their identifying with being the opposite sex that they were born as, that they are biologically right now today. I heard, in fact, it was on Camo X this week. One of the talk show hosts put it very bluntly, and yeah, this is a family show, but it's kind of a sensitive subject. But you know, here we go. I try to keep it clean, but you know, I think the rules here should be very simple. This is a 17-year-old student, so I think, again, when you're talking about morality versus legality, let's keep in mind here that because he or she, however you want to describe them, is a minor under Missouri law. I think that you know, if you want to keep that in mind when you're talking about legal issues, strictly on a real life basis, on a common sense basis, if you were born with a penis, you should probably go into the boys' locker room. Following that, my question would be, at the end of this report, it says that Lila Perry has dropped out of gym class, quote, for safety reasons. Well, what could those safety reasons be? That would be my first question. Are the safety reasons involved in the fact that does he believe he should be using the girls' locker room because he identifies as a girl? Or is it that he does not want to use the boys' locker room? Is that where the safety concerns come in? If he goes into a boys' locker room dressed as a female, identifying as a female, is there going to be some backlash? Is there going to be some harassment? Is he fearful of being harassed, being maybe even physically assaulted because of the way he looks, because of his appearance, if he goes into a boys' locker room? wanting to use the girls' locker room not just an issue that he identifies. I think there's a lot of us that still are kind of out to lunch on the phrase identifies. Well, what entails identifying with a member of the opposite sex? But that's a whole other issue. Is the safety concerns because he doesn't want to use the boys' locker room for fear of some sort of physical assault or anything of that nature? Does the girls' locker room not just represent the fact that he identifies as a female, therefore he thinks he should be able to use that locker room? Or is that locker room presenting a safe place? Is it representing a safe place for him that he knows that if he goes in there, or she, I'm confused, if this person goes into the girls' locker room, does he feel like that his safety is not threatened, that there is no threat of any sort of backlash or reprisal or physical assault or anything like that? Because it seems to me maybe it's coming into play here. Maybe it's coming into question. And I'm certainly not advocating, that this person be physically assaulted or beaten up or whatever. This person obviously has their own set of problems to deal with, and so they don't need to be assaulted by anyone. So that's certainly not the issue here. But again, like this mother said, are the girls supposed to just suck it up? And I've seen several accounts here too that the girls are saying that when this person comes into the locker room, they feel uncomfortable because what they feel like is there's a guy in the girls' locker room and they don't want to be undressed. They don't want to be dressing and undressing and be in various stages of dressing and undressing, because bottom line for them, there's a guy in the locker room. And, I can certainly understand that. Again, when the left wants something bad enough, they shove it through the court system. And so that's ultimately where this is going to go. And again, I think it's probably another question of whose rights are more important. We have set up this question of whose rights are more important in a lot of other issues. And I think before long that the people whose rights don't seem to be as important as the ones being pushed front and center, they're going to start getting tired of it, and it's going to start getting a little old. This is another case, again, like the case with Kim Davis, that again, because liberals are going to push it through the court system, we haven't heard the last of it. So, there may be other protests, and there may be other walkouts by students, and there were parents also that showed up to this protest too, and who can blame them? I don't know. I'm not a parent, but if I were, I don't know that if I was the parent of a daughter, I don't think I want a boy in the locker room with my daughter. My daughter is going to deal with boys, and that's not an issue, but she doesn't need to deal with them while she's dressing and undressing in a locker room after gym class. And, like I said, we will be hearing more about that. Other news this week, of course, last weekend we had this, I'm going to call it what it is, and I'm not going to call it anything else. And if anybody has a problem with that, call me up or get in the chat room. This execution of the Texas deputy last weekend in Houston. And that's exactly what it is. You don't even have to look at the surveillance video, although I have. You can read the accounts of what happened here and come to the immediate conclusion that this was an execution. Deputy Sheriff, I believe his name was Darren Goforth, last Friday evening, was gassing up his cruiser, gassing up his patrol car at a gas station in Houston, and Shannon Miles, 30 years old, just came up behind him and started emptying his gun. And he emptied a .40 caliber gun to the tune of 15 bullets into Deputy Goforth. into Deputy Goforth's body. And, of course, he died at the scene. And, you know, since this shooting, since this execution, there has been, I believe the number I saw was three law enforcement officers around the nation have been shot. In one instance, forgive me, I don't remember where it was, but a female police officer stopped to help what looked like a vehicle that had broken down on the side of the road, and the person in question threw her over an embankment, wrestled with her, no doubt probably tried to get her gun, and threw her over an embankment, and she fell about 35 feet. Hold on just a second here, got a little glitch, but that's okay. So this has got to stop. This has got to stop. Our law enforcement officers are being picked off one by one by one. And, you know, I think that most people are in agreement here that that a very good portion of the reason behind this, I would say, myself, I would say 99%. Again, if you got a problem with that, call me up. 99% of the encouragement of this kind of behavior is coming from groups like Black Lives Matter. They are openly advocating, they are openly encouraging the assault and the murder officers. And there are a lot of people who want this group to be labeled not just a hate crime, a group that is a hate group, but that is, you know, and I'll say what it is because I think this is exactly what they are. They are domestic terrorists. They are a group of domestic terrorists. That's what this is. All you have to do is look at videotape. All you have to do is look at quotes and comments and tweets and Facebook postings to know that this group is a domestic terror group. And going back to this story last weekend of Deputy Goforth, he was identified in a lineup as the shooter from a witness, someone who witnessed this incident. NBC News reported that Miles' mother said her son could not be the gunman because he was shopping with her at the time. And, you know, that is always, it's always the case here with people who are, and in this case, the guy's on videotape emptying his gun into a deputy. And what, you know, what is the response from this guy's mother? Of course, maybe you can say, well, yeah, she's his mother. She's going to defend him. Okay. But, you know, it's the same not my boy mentality that we get over and over and over. And you know, it's what boggles my mind is the phenomenal lack of accountability from anybody who is committing these crimes. And even a couple weeks ago, I had seen online, and I got to take a break here in a minute. And you can go online probably and see it. I'm not sure how you get there, but it was a woman who was defending someone who had shot a police officer. Apparently, this woman had known the suspect all of his life. Oh, he was a good boy. He never did anything. You know, the same old story, blah, 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 blah. And her quote was, oh, no, I don't think he did anything wrong. He didn't do anything that bad. He just shot a cop. Excuse me? He just shot a cop. That is all he did. He just shot a cop. That's what we're dealing with here, people. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people who say, oh, he didn't do anything that bad. He just shot a cop. Like he swatted a bug. That is all it is to these people. And this is a mentality that has to be fought. It has to be dealt with, and it has to be fought, and it has to be pushed back on. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I will be right back. We still got lots to get to. And we're going to get to as much as we can, so stay close.
You've been looking for love all around the world. Baby, don't you know this country? Girl, still
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, for chilling with me on this Friday before a three-day weekend. Yes, people, we are here. Doesn't get much better than that. Hope everyone has lots of great plans planned for this holiday weekend, and hope everybody's safe. But quickly before I get out of here, you know, it had to happen sometime, and well, here we are. Yes, that's right. It's that part of the show where, well, we have to talk about Hillary Clinton's emails. Yes, I know, we're all bored. We can't stand it. We're tired of the Clintons getting away with everything and then some, but, you know, this is, and this story was I heard the great one, Mark Levin, talk about this column the other night on his show, and this is actually from the Daily Beast of all places, and it's called "Will Hillary Clinton's Emails Burn the White House?" And very quickly, counterintelligence specialists suspect that the former Secretary of State wasn't the only member of the Obama administration emailing secrets around. Hillary Clinton's email problems are already causing headaches for her presidential campaign, but within American counterintelligence circles, there's a mounting sense that the former Secretary of State may not be the only Obama administration official in trouble. This is a scandal that has the potential to spread to the White House as well. The Federal Bureau of Investigation can be expected to be tight-lipped, especially because this highly sensitive case is being handled by counterintelligence experts from the Bureau headquarters a few blocks down Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House, not by the FBI's Washington field office. That will ensure this investigation gets the needed, quote, big picture view, since even senior FBI agents at any given field office may only have a partial look at complex counterintelligence cases. This most certainly is a counterintelligence matter. There's a widely held belief among American counterspies that foreign intelligence agencies had to be reading the emails on Hillary's private server, particularly since it was wholly unencrypted for months. Quote, I'd fire my staff if they weren't getting all this, explained one veteran Department of Defense counterintelligence official, adding, quote, I'd hate to be the guy in Moscow or Beijing right now who had to explain why they didn't have all of Hillary's email, given the widespread hacking that has plagued the State Department, the Pentagon, and even the White House during Obama's presidency. Senior counterintelligence officials are assuming the worst about what the Russians and the Chinese know. And, of course, when did they know it? Emailgate has barely touched the White House directly, though it's clear that some senior administration officials beyond the State Department were aware of Hillary's unorthodox email and server habits, given how widely some of the emails from Clinton and her staff are forwarded around the Beltway. Obama's inner circle may not be off limits to the FBI for long. However, particularly since the slipshod security practices of certain senior White House officials have been a topic of discussion in the intelligence community for years. Years! Hillary Clinton was far from the only senior Obama appointee to play fast and loose with classified, according to intelligence community insiders. While most counterspies agree that Hillary's practices, especially using her own server and having her staffers place classified information into unclassified emails in violation of federal law, were especially egregious, any broad-brush investigation into security matters are likely to turn up other suspects, they maintain. The whole administration is filled with people who can't shoot straight when it comes to classified. An intelligence community official explained to me this week, this is the author of the piece here, three U.S. officials suggested that Susan Rice, the national security advisor, might be at particular risk if a classified information probe goes wide. But it should be noted that Rice has made all sorts of enemies in the security establishment for her prickly demeanor, use of coarse language, and strategic missteps. That's surprising. Shocking. However, Clinton should take no comfort from the fact that others may be in trouble with the FBI, too. Just how many of her unclassified emails were actually classified is a matter of dispute that will take months for the FBI to resolve with assistance from the State Department and intelligence community. The current figure bandied about is something like 300 of the emails scanned to date by investigators contain information that should have been marked as classified is somewhat notional at this point, not least because the intelligence community has yet to weigh in on most of them. Spy agencies typically take a harder line on classification than the State Department does, including a tendency to retroactively mark as classified mundane things. For instance, press reports that comment on security matters that can be deemed secret that other less than security-prone agencies might not. That said, there's little doubt that our intelligence agencies fear that the compromise endangered by Hillary's email slipshod practices are significant. And again, this goes on and on. I would encourage anybody to read this piece. I don't know who the author is here. Here it is, John Schindler at the Daily Beast, called "Will Hillary Clinton's Emails Burn the White House?" And, of course, now we've since learned that that one of her head IT guys, one of the guys that was in charge of taking care of this server and taking care of these classified, taking care of these emails, be they classified or unclassified, and, you know, she's changed her story so many times. They were, they weren't, they were marked, they were not marked. He has pleaded the fifth. And you know what? Maybe I'm not an expert, but it seems to me that if you plead the Fifth Amendment, what have you got to hide? What do you not want people to know? You know, maybe we will be finding out exactly what it is that they don't want us to know. Let's hope they do. But very quickly, before I get out of here. I like this story because as a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan, you know how we Cardinal fans love to hate the Cubs. And, well, this is a story from MSN, I guess. Oh, New York Daily News. I'm sorry. After Cubs pitcher Jake Arrieta pitched a no-hitter this week, the Cubbies had a pajama party. The Cubs celebrated Jake Arrieta's no-hitter with a pajama party. After Arrieta's 12-strikeout performance against the Dodgers in Los Angeles, he threw on a mustache print onesie and joined his PJ-clad teammates for the trip back to Chicago. The kitty attire was suggested before the game by manager Joe Maddon, one of his colorful apparel themes to build team unity. The Cubs embraced the goofiness an hour after the final out, coming onto Dodger Stadium Field in their brightly colored PJs to pose for photos. There were at least 3 Supermen and 4 Batmen in the group. Rookie Chris Bryant was one of a handful of Ninja Turtles in the mix. For me, growing up, I always thought, oh, baseball players wear a suit and tie, he told ESPN.com. It's kind of cool to goof around a little bit and be a kid again. The skipper wore UGG boots with a Top Gun-inspired getup with, quote, "I feel the need for sleep," written on the back with some strategic tailoring. Mine's got a front trap and not a back trap, Dora Madden said, declining to reveal any other details. That's the most necessary thing on a plane ride. You know, it's just the Cubs. Coming from a Cardinal fan, it's the Cubs. And you know what Cubs mean at this time of the year? You know what Cubs stands for? Completely useless by September. With that, I am out of here. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. There's new stuff up there. You can go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble. You can find me on Twitter @PatriotWitch. And please go to theblacksphere.net. There is not just myself with many things to peruse and consider there, but also lots of awesomely talented people who have things written there as well, including Kevin Jackson. So please check it out. Everybody have a fantastic weekend. Have a very safe weekend, and I will see you next time.